Welcome back to Critical Conversations in Education. Happy New Year! Mind you, it's the 31st of January. I don't know if that's a little bit too late to be wishing people Happy New Year, but Happy New Year anyway. This is the first podcast of 2020. I'm on my own today, no Kirsty. So it falls to me to introduce the next episode, where I have a really great conversation with Jane Bush, who is the head teacher at Langston Junior School, part of the University's Academy Trust, about how she is working to develop a culture of practitioner research in her school. So that follows on nicely from the last couple of podcasts that we have offered you about using research in education. And I hope that this is going to offer a practical perspective on what this could look like in practice. So, enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side.
You know, it's used by multiple people in multiple ways. Yeah. And that's something that I kind of keep having to go and go, right, you know, just be careful. I have to actually say to people, you know, so can you just clarify for me what you mean by the word research, just to make sure that we're actually on the same page when we're talking. But I mean, you know, certainly in terms of what it means for me is, it is about actually reading from the best. It's about really sort of sourcing information, sourcing knowledge yourself. Something that really makes you start to challenge your own thinking before you come up with a methodology that you want to actually use. So, I mean, it's about that idea of going, okay, so this is what I want to achieve. And I think it's really important it's outcome driven. Okay. So it means that, you know, that it's clear. What is it I want to actually get out of this? So as I said, the example I used, you know, feedback, was saying that actually, you know, with feedback, it was saying, right, does it work and actually have an impact for children? And actually, is this really of value for your time? So it was those kind of questions that we were going, right, this is what we want to make sure that whatever we have out of this research, that it is taken into consideration, those two things. So, I mean, for me, that idea of research is just saying, right, get multiple sources, come in, come together, pull that information back together.
So in that sense, then, there's research happening in two ways here, it sounds like. You've got, let's look at the established knowledge base and let's see what that can tell us that maybe we haven't considered or thought about before. And then let's have a go at carrying some inquiry out and seeing what we find out.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say there are different models. The reason being is because actually we have different people taking on the research. So our teachers carry out research, and so do our teaching assistants. Now, for our teaching assistants, it tends to be more research informed. So it means that actually it's far more guided, a lot narrower in its approach. So it means that we would use, so at the moment they're doing something on accelerated reader. They're tapping in on the work that's already been done by EEF, so by Sutton Trust. So it means that they're using something that's actually already been created. Their level of experimentation comes, they narrow it down and pick a group. So they might say, what's the impact of accelerated reader on low ability boys? So it means, right, I've got this model of how I can use accelerated reader from that EEF research. Now I'm going to actually look at how it's going to impact on that small group. So it's a way for them to kind of develop its idea of use for a real purpose. Whereas I think, you know, for the teachers, it's a far more open model, where actually theirs is actually multiple sources of information. The methodology choice is a lot freer. So, and they develop their own inquiry question, whereas teaching assistants are given an inquiry question. So it means that we deliberately scaffolded and structured that.
So in terms of the methods then that the teachers are using, what kinds of things do you is working for them in terms of gathering information?
It starts really from we provide some summary of some research that you know, the senior leaders have already carried out. So it means that we actually do some of the groundwork at first. Because the reality is teachers don't have the luxury of time such as that. So we make it part of our remit to actually, you know, to go out and carry out some of the reading. We then sort of collate that and choose extracts for that initial reading. So we provide that to teachers just to get them going. And then we give them pointers, so other reading they could go to. What we tended to find, though, with the research that they've done in the past is actually they've gone and sourced to their own afterwards. So it means you've ignited an interest. a curiosity in them.
Mm.
And so then they've gone and actually looked for their own information, you know, to further expand their own knowledge.
So when you get together and talk about what they've read, in terms of, I know we've talked a lot about developing criticality.
Mm-hmm.
How is there anything that happens that supports the development of critical reading? So is there some kind of a sense of, I wouldn't read something from that source, you know, because that's probably not so reliable, or...
Probably not so much so. Sometimes that can come out as an outcome.
Okay.
So it means that, you know, particularly if they've chosen a methodology that's largely informed by a single source. So in other words, although they've done a range of reading, it may be that then they've read something that might have an approach. So if we took, you know, I don't know, it could be a Shirley Clarke approach, or there could be, you know, so they've gone, actually, okay, there was something in her reading that I identified that actually I would like to trial and experiment and to see. So this is why it almost becomes, it feels like that, what we were saying earlier about that research informed.
Yeah.
Because it's almost, it's something that actually is already there, but they're going to experiment with it in their own, within their own classroom and put their own twist on it. Because I think that's the thing, is it evolves. You know it's going to evolve. You don't just sort of labour away at a single strategy. So they have a series of review points throughout the research where collectively as a team they come together and they go, what's working, what's not working? Mm-hmm. What should we tweak and change? So it means that the model grows, but it ultimately stems from a source.
And that idea of what's working and what isn't working, what kinds of things, you talked about being outcome driven earlier, so what kinds of measures would they be using about?
Sometimes it's quantitative, sometimes it's qualitative, so it means that actually, you know, sometimes they can be researching something that's going to have hard data behind it. So if we took, for instance, last year we were looking at a more able piece, it was around actually how you can support the more able to achieve greater depth in writing. And so that was a research project that they'd taken on. That, of course, is really, really well supported by data, by hard data. So it was quite easy to measure. Other times, though, it can be qualitative, such as just actually how well received is it by the children?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So it can simply be a case of, right, I know that's not working because I'm not getting the right response from the level of engagement with the process. So it means that actually I know this isn't doing anything. And quite often, most times, it's a combination of the two things.
Yeah.
So it's both quantitative and qualitative. But that's all part of the methodology stage. At that early stage, they decide how they're going to measure and what they're going to measure to be able to monitor it as it's going through the process.
So when you've done, you said SLT's done a bit of the groundwork on reading and things. Is that how you ensure that teachers' inquiry is linked to school improvement outcomes?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So... we identify a school improvement priority area, and it's that we start to look into. So, I mean, I'd always do background reading anyway. If I've got an area that needs improvement, I'll kind of go and look and see what's actually out there. And so I suppose it stemmed from that initial interest anyway, is that we were doing it. And so it was like, actually, you know, this is a great opportunity, a great in for staff to be able to make them to start think more broadly about it. And so this year in particular, it's on conceptual understanding, which is all about how we're developing our curriculum. So it's about looking at how key concepts can support better retention of knowledge.
Okay.
So it's but it's an interesting piece of
research. Interesting.
Yeah.
So how's that presenting in terms, is that the whole school are looking at different bits of that, are they?
So basically what we did was when we started off, again, we provided some reading pieces. This was done for all teachers. And so it's the teachers who are working on that curriculum development aspect of it.
So your TA, the TA's separate.
That's right. The TA research is actually run completely separately, and that's actually around. We've recently implemented Accelerated Reader.
Okay.
And so it's about really getting them to engage and experiment with Accelerated Reader.
Yeah.
And so it means that it's quite empowering for them, you know, to be able to do their own inquiry, not to have to be spoon-fed through a process.
So, and appropriate to their role.
Absolutely. Exactly. That's it. So, you know, curriculum development isn't particularly appropriate to the role of of a teaching assistant, whereas, you know, for our subject leaders, this is highly relevant. And they understand where it comes from. So they, in other words, they know that actually it's come out of a school improvement priority. They know it's come out of our recent curriculum development. And the work that we've done around the new framework and guidance that's come out of that. So they kind of know where the research is firmly coming from. And so, yes, that started with us doing a piece of reading. Although, having said, we have got two teachers in the school who are not engaged in that. They're actually doing a reading project.
Okay.
But again, that's because reading is another of our priorities. The chap who's leading on that is the English lead. So it made sense again. And so it means there's a real ownership process. So if indeed they can come and say to you, actually, look, this is what I really would like to engage in. This is a priority to me. The majority of my teachers are doing the conceptual understanding. And then it's just the, literally the two of them on reading.
So did the focus on the curriculum come out of the new Ofsted framework?
Not really. It was already there, actually. You know, pre-framework, and we already had as a school improvement priority that we wanted to create better links in learning. And so it meant that, I think, you know, for us, we'd already recognised that actually, you know, some learning in some areas wasn't as strong as it was in others. And I think, you know, because we'd made quite good rates of progress, particularly, you know, our core subjects have really seen good improvements. You know, we'd done a lot of work around humanities, a lot of work around French, and so we were seeing really good standards in those. But we were aware that there were still some areas where actually the learning wasn't as strong. And so it meant that we'd begun work already on our curriculum development, and then the framework came out. It was like, actually, it has some great research attached to it. And so it meant that we were able to use, again, some of the research that Ofsted had done to inform their framework, fitted so well with the plan that we had in place. So, you know, it was quite a fortunate and happy coincidence, really.
So which bits of the Ofsted research did you find most useful?
I would have said I certainly found fascinating the idea of knowledge versus skills and the whole debate around that, because, again, I think that's a tie-up in language and getting caught up in perhaps some of the wrong things. I think, you know, some of the principles behind some of that research, I thought, actually, you know, it's not a knowledge versus skills. It is a combination of the both. So there was some interesting research around that. I think as well, there was some great research around links. You know, and links in learning, but not tenuous links, you know, ensuring that they were rich and meaningful links. And I think the one thing that kind of I took out of, I think, the whole development of the curriculum over the last 4 or 5 years is the need for mastery is, and the need to dwell more, and the need to stop being in a rat race of trying to just cover at the expense of actually any level of understanding. So I think for me, it was a case of actually this was a stop. Really stop, reflect, think, actually, how do we slow this process down so that we're getting richer, deeper understanding?
So I can hear a parallel there then between your vision for your children's learning and your vision for your teachers' learning.
Absolutely.
So in terms of their development, they've almost got less to do in terms of coverage. You're focusing on this idea. But let's really look at it from all angles. So how do you facilitate the looking at it from all angles? I mean, in terms of, do you staff meetings? You said something about earlier about getting into teams and talking about it. How does that work?
It fits into a cycle. You know, so at the moment we have an introductory session to the research right at the very, very beginning of the year. So, you know, where we just kind of ignite interest and curiosity. It's about getting the pace of it right as well, because you do need to allow people some time to absorb information. We then have half-termly staff meeting will be given over to research. So it means that we come back and we meet and we review together. By October, all staff have signed up to be part of a given team. We have no say in that. They do that completely independently from us. So they tend to do it more through, they'll talk to each other about what's of interest, and then those teams naturally form in terms of, right, well, I'm interested in that, so I'll work with you. And so it means that that level of, there's already that professional dialogue beginning. Then once we get through that stage and then they start to formulate a methodology and they're ready for implementation, we quite shortly afterwards actually put in a lesson study session where they actually get to go and work in one another's and they go and watch each other teach. Mm. They have a discussion after the teach and then the next day, so they make a tweak to what it is they were experimenting with. The next day they go and watch somebody else teach with that tweak in place so that they can almost see a progressive impact of the professional dialogue that they're having. So that's kind of right in the middle of the year. They're then given further sessions where they are expected to kind of like pull together evidence, and that'll be, you know, student interviews, data analysis, anything at all, before they come back to us at the end of the process, when they'll present to the rest of the school.
Okay. So as you were saying earlier, actually, the idea of turning that presentation into something that's got a sort of formalised accreditation to it is not a big part of
the
journey because so much of it's already done.
No, that's right. I mean, they're already referencing, you know, they're referencing the academia, you know, they're referencing where they've got the information from, you know, their evidence is triangulated, so it's got a robustness to it, you know. So, so no, it wouldn't be a massive leap, I think, for it to receive accreditation.
When you said earlier about the time, where does that come from? Because I, again, a lot of the conversations that I have with school leaders who buy into this in terms of heart, but in the logistics of making that work in a school timetable, how do you make that work?
I would say it's about one, it is prioritised. Okay. So, I mean, it is a performance management target.
Right.
So it means that, you know, it's shown that it's given value. It's given real value, and that we make sure that actually, you know, that, that staff, they can request time so they can have time for it. They are also, as I say, given a PDM every half term. Those PDMs are quite often like made up of breakaway sessions. So it means they're not a led and us doing it. That's an opportunity for them to actually get together in their team and work within their team.
So is there stuff that you lose as a result of prioritising that? You know, are there things that you think have fallen off over the last few years because, and then...
I would say no.
Okay. Because you're creating time from somewhere.
It's not so much creating time.
Yeah.
It's that actually... the reason I don't feel that I've lost anything is because of actually what it's bringing to the table. I mean, at the end of the day, if I had a school improvement area, no matter what, I've got to do something to bring about improvement in that area, in which case I'm going to invest heavily in training. I might invest heavily in PDMs.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to, you know, so I mean, it means actually I'd already have to do that.
Yeah.
In actual fact, if I look at this, I'd say this is far more cost effective than perhaps if I was going for a typical school improvement structure, which I would have to actually then buy in and buy in expertise and buy in input.
Yeah, and it's more sort of training.
Yeah, that's right. Based. A training approach where I have that session led, which, yeah, absolutely, you can do that. I'm getting exactly the same outcomes. The only difference is actually I don't have to ensure implementation because they're already, they're the ones controlling that implementation.
Yeah, that
in actual fact, it takes less time from me as a leader because I'm not driving it. That's, you know, they're driving that, they're driving those improvements, and so I find that's probably for me more time effective, more cost effective.
And that brings us really neatly round to the sort of why does this matter question, because my background in investigating teachers as researchers, teachers as inquirers has always come personally from a view of empowerment and of autonomy and of professionalising. So would you say, I feel like I can hear that. I don't want to put words
in your mouth.
No, but
I'm going to read it.
Okay.
Because this was based on a book, World of Better Learning, Overcoming Barriers to Teacher Research from Simon Borg. And his actual words are, develop teachers' capacity for autonomous professional judgment, reduces teachers' feelings of frustration and isolation, allows teachers to move out of a submissive position and be curriculum innovators. That to me, you know, it sums it up.
Yeah.
And so it means that, yeah, you know, even our reasons for doing this are grounded in actually, yeah, we believe passionately that this is a strong way forward for school improvement.
And I suppose the sort of evaluation of impact is something that is so ingrained into school leadership. Would you say that, although you've not conducted any kind of formal inquiry into it, I don't think, have you got a sense that actually, yes, my teachers do feel all the things I would want them to feel as professionals? Are you getting that feedback?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so typically, you know, we do staff view questionnaires reasonably frequently anyway. And certainly one of the things, the outcomes that came for me over the last few years, so I did it about 3 years ago and I did it again just recently. And one of the most significant changes was in actually the happiness in the workplace, do you know what I mean? And in actual fact, you know, their view on how they are valued as a professional. And so, yeah, that change in attitude, and equally from the teaching assistants who, in the very first year with them doing research, I think they, you know, there wasn't buy-in. They were very, very reluctant to engage. It felt like another thing. It felt like a measure. But in actual fact, when they ended up again coming to do the presentations at the end of the year, one, I never ever said what it had to look like. I said, you know, that was the point is, I said, you are just going to come and share with me your professional findings. And then what they saw was that actually we took up some of the best of those professional findings and we implemented them.
And by best?
By best, it was things such as, there was a piece on restorative practice, and again, it was agreed by the whole group that it was a really, really highly effective strategy for how to make restorative practice practical, because it can be quite a time-consuming task. And it was a group of teaching assistants who had developed an approach that would save time but still have really, really good restorative discussions.
So by best there, that I can hear there's a sense of it's best because there are a range of people that
there's
think
buy-in.
It's worthy of...
That's right, everybody says it's that buy-in. It's that everybody sits around and goes, yeah, that sounds like actually that's going to have the right impact. That sounds highly effective. That sounds like something that would make my working life much easier. You know, that holds value. You know, both to children, to them, you know. So definitely it is a collective view at the end. It is not an SLT decision on what does and doesn't get implemented. But it does always go into policy. So it means that what we do is the change, then you make the change tangible.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, right, so we've agreed this, we're going to do this then.
Unless and until
Absolutely.
We have more information that means we might change it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, well, there we are. That's a section of a really interesting and productive conversation that we had, Jane and I. Thank you so much to Jane for her time and the effort that she put into sharing her thoughts with us on that. If you've got any further thoughts or comments or questions or anything you just want to add to the conversation around the idea of the use of research in schools, then please do get in touch through Twitter, on the webpage where you found the podcast, or through our email address, thebridge@chi.ac.uk. In the next episode, hopefully Kirsty and I will manage to be in the same room at the same time, talking to each other, sharing our thoughts and poor jokes with you, which I will very much look forward to and hope you will too. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time on The Bridge. Bye.